I'm announcing today that the government is no longer pursuing contract for closure negotiations. Can I say that all parties have conducted those negotiations in good faith? It was always about commercially best outcomes. And on the basis of the outcome of discussions to date, I simply say there's no value for money for the government in continuing this process.
What was the sticking point?
Look, there are a range of considerations, both from a government and a generator point of view. The negotiations were pursued in good faith, but the government cannot be satisfied a value for money outcome can be achieved in terms of the objectives of the program. And I've said all along that there was no bottomless pit in terms of the amount of money available from the government's perspective to actually buy out the electricity generation in terms of coal-fired power.
Were figures put on the table?
Clearly, there were figures on both sides. Five companies participated in the process, as did the government. There were significant differences in terms of value. They are commercially sensitive, and there's no way I'll reveal them because that was the nature of the negotiations. And I must say, this gives some certainty to the Valley. The Valley now knows that there's no intended closure of any of the coal-fired power operations in the Valley.
Oh, it gives certainty to the Valley in one respect, but it certainly doesn't. It doesn't support what the government was aiming to achieve, which is the reduction of emissions. So what now?
Look, in terms of emissions, can I say, the demand for energy is actually down in Australia considerably. That in turn is actually reducing emissions. The question is how we make the transition to clean energy. And one would have to say that in terms of the future, the coal-fired power stations in Victoria have got a commercial future. The real issue was difference in value from the government's point of view and the operator's point of view with respect to what they thought we should pay to actually request that they leave the generator field in the period 2016 to 2020, and there was no agreement on the value of the assets.
Now that this is off the table, what onus will there be on those power stations involved in this process to further reduce their emissions?
Obviously, they themselves are investigating what technological options exist. A number of them are actually investing in technology opportunities with respect to reducing their emissions, as is the Victorian government in association with the Commonwealth government. We've got a range of programs on the table, including CarbonNet, and I might say the Lignite process of $90 million, aimed at encouraging research and development in the Valley with a view to reducing moisture content and reducing emissions.
Weren't some of the programs, though, dependent on the contract for closure going ahead for these power stations to close, Mr. Ferguson?
No, the programs were separate because we're only talking to True Energy in terms of your lawn, HRL in terms of energy bricks, and I might say Hazelwood. The objective was 2,000 megawatts by 2020. Putting aside whether or not we had achieved a commercial outcome, there was always a future for coal-fired power generation in the Valley. Hence, the process of investment technology was entirely separate from the contract for closure process. Because even if we had achieved part closure in terms of coal-fired power generation in the Valley, some generators would have continued in existence. We still had the challenge of reducing emissions and the requirement to invest in technology.
Will the power stations involved in the contract for closure have access to federal money to get cleaner?
Well, clearly they've already got access in terms of permits. And I might say the technology we are supporting through our investment in clean energy with respect to the partnership with the Victorian government. CarbonNet is a prime example, and the Lignite process, which the Victorian Minister Michael O'Brien and I announced in the Latrobe Valley about 4 to 6 weeks ago, looking for partners, $90 million from the Commonwealth and the Victorian governments, leveraging up to a couple of $100 million or more in terms of, I think, the interest by a variety of parties. And there's a significant amount of interest in terms of accessing that funding with their funding to actually take forward the challenge in terms of technology.
Mr. Ferguson, has anyone applied for that?
Well, that's been handled by the Victorian government We've given the Department of Primary Instruction in Victoria the management opportunities, and they will go through the process, and in due course we'll announce the outcome of that process.
Minister Martin Ferguson is with us. He has just announced that the government will not be pursuing the contract for closure process. And Mr. Ferguson, I'm assuming that that extends to all of those applicants, not
all
just
five
those
applicants. There were three in the Latrobe Valley, one in South Australia and one in Queensland. It is across the board.
Would you be able to detail for us how emissions, you said a little earlier in the interview that emissions were coming down. Can you tell us exactly how they are coming down?
Well, firstly, there's a drop in demand for energy, far more than we expected. What we've got at the moment is a lower demand in energy because of restructuring the economy. For example, the demand for energy at the manufacturing industry in Victoria is dropped off considerably. You've also got higher reaction by consumers to increase electricity prices through the normal processes, the requirement to continue to upgrade the distribution system, the poles and wires, and I might say the introduction of solar PV. So you are seeing a complete change in the nature of the energy market at the moment, in actual fact quicker than we first thought, and I must say a significant drop in energy, which in many ways has now suggested that the requirement for new investment in baseload capacity, be it coal or combined cycle in terms of gas or whatever, is now pushed off well into the future.
Mr. Ferguson, how much criticism are you expected to get from the public about this? Is that in that perhaps this is just the contract for closure was another process that hadn't been thought through properly, that went through the motions but didn't get a result?
No, look, there's always going to be criticism from some of the environmental NGOs, but so what I've given up trying to do is please them, because no matter what you can do, they'll always want to continue to campaign for the purposes of membership and, I might say, donations. The government, I might say, the company's entered in this process in good faith. There has been detailed negotiations over a period, and a range of factors and assumptions were considered, including, for example, expectations of forward wholesale electricity prices, the impact of the price in carbon, the demand for electricity that I've spoken about today, and the cost of new lower emissions generation such as gas. It is expected the price of gas on the East Coast is actually going to increase.
Would there ever be a point where this might be reconsidered and another go at negotiations?
It's not the government's intention to revisit this issue. We've got a price on carbon in place with a renewable energy target, a considerable investment in clean energy technology, and given the lower demand for cars, we think the market will sort out the energy mix in the future, and the nature of that energy mix will be determined over time on the basis of the economic parameters, the operation of the market that we have developed.
Martin Ferguson, thank you.
Thank you.